Hello and welcome to another episode of the Tombstone Podcast, a podcast where we talk about video games, the video game industry, and whatever else we want to talk about. My name's Devin.
I'm Kevin.
My name's Dominic.
And I'm Zach.
And we are going to go with our regular round robin intro. What's been good in the video game world, Kevin?
Well, last week, if y'all remember, I mentioned that I was playing Wind Waker and kind of almost quizzing myself. I finished that up pretty recently, and yeah, I pretty much 100%ed it as much as I felt like from memory. So I got all the hearts and I got all the upgrades and everything. And so since I was done with that, I decided I would juxtapose the cute and colorful nature of that game with Bloodborne.
Oh.
And that's what I've been doing ever since. I'm really enjoying it. I'm remarkably better at it than I remember. So I don't know what happened, but something clicked and I'm better at Bloodborne now.
You've had time for your skills to marinate and meld with your DNA.
Apparently.
It's just been, become a part of you now.
That's usually what
happens.
It's
been probably two, maybe 3 years since I last played it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I never beat it.
You never beat it at all?
I never did get to beat it. No.
Yeah, he didn't have a PS4, so.
Oh, yeah. That's
he
right.
played
yeah.
it on ours and then didn't
and
finish.
And then we left.
Yeah.
Yep. And then y'all left me.
I want to say I only got to like maybe the second or third area in Bloodborne because I've never really gotten very far either. But the same phenomena happens when I do like Dark Souls or like other Souls-like games or like the Soulsborne games. I mean, like I'll stop playing for like a year and a half. I'll come back and suddenly the problem that made me stop playing is like the easiest thing in the world to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just like it comes from my unconscious mind parsing it because I would not do the riposte mechanic in Bloodborne where you shoot them right as they're attacking you and then you can do a visceral attack.
Yeah,
I was just not doing that a lot. And then I just picked up the game and I'm doing it to pretty much everybody now and it makes it way easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like parrying in the other games where it's like if you could do it, the game's fucking easy. But if you can't do it, that's a really pivotal part of the game that you need to learn how to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get away with not doing it, but the longer you get away with not doing it, the more you're investing in never doing it because it just gets... It's harder to learn it later in the game than it is to learn it early. So, like, if you just go without doing it for hours and hours and hours, you get toward the end of the game, like my first playthrough of Dark Souls, where I was like, I don't know how to parry, but I'm going to fight Gwyn.
Yeah, like, fighting Gwyn without parrying is it's fun.
Yeah, it goes from being one of the easiest bosses to being one of the hardest bosses.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What about you, Dominic? What you got for us?
Yeah, I've been kicking back. I've gotten a lot better health wise, so I'm not so cooped up playing some casual stuff. So I've been playing some League of Legends and trying to climb rank. I started my provisionals very recently, and it's been a mixed bag. It's been really really good games and also some really fucking terrible games.
Good, good. Variety is the spice of life. It's so I guess that's good that you've been having shit games as also really good games.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's just you can't have too much good in your life.
Well, that's definitely that remains to be seen. But I don't know. It's a fun time though. Even still, even the losses are learning experiences, which are much better than just rage quitting.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Zach? What you got for us?
I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy XIV. I know that's what I mentioned last week. I was trying it out. It's pretty fun. I feel like I'm probably going to stick with it. And, well, until next month when Animal Crossing comes out, and then that becomes everything I play. But, yeah, for now it's just Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I feel like Animal Crossing is going to become... like most of our Discord server's entire life for a while.
Yep.
Yeah, it's gonna be pretty flooded for a while. just like whenever a Pokemon game comes out, we get flooded with Pokemon for a while. It's just going to be the same thing with Animal Crossing, but I'm excited because, again, I get to play it as well. I've never really played a Animal Crossing game before, so this will be fun for me. Mm-hmm. So for me, yeah, this week was a little bit shit with work and all that, so I haven't been able to play too many games, but again, been playing some League with y'all and playing some Link to the Past, trying to get through that game. That game is so much fun. And yeah, there's not really anything coming up that I'm excited for other than Animal Crossing, like we just mentioned. I can't really think of anything else that's happening in the worldwide sports of video games, or however it's called.
Worldwide sport games.
Yes. I do know that Riot is making an FPS game.
Ooh.
But I have no idea what it's going to be like or what it's going to be about. So I'm not sure if I'm excited for that at all, or yeah, if it's just going to be another thing that's coming out. Like they released TFT, and I was like, that's cool, I guess. And they released, Legends of Runeterra. I was like, that's
cool. I really enjoyed that one,
but
though.
Yeah. I'm not a big card game person. Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard to invest time into them.
Yeah. I mean, Doom Eternal is coming out. I want to say it's at the same time as Animal Crossing, which is why we're getting all the
crossover memes.
Oh my god, and it's so
Isabel
perfect.
Isabel slaying demons.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, it's great. But I mean, if I'm able to, I don't know. I'm personally gonna put Eternal on the back burner because there's just a lot of other stuff to get through before I decide to pick up another FPS.
Yeah. Yeah, I never did play Doom 2016, so I'd definitely be picking up Doom Eternal and checking that out and seeing how that is. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be great. I'm hoping.
Yeah, for sure.
I am in a sad downward spiral because I have nothing that I'm looking really forward to. I guess other than The Wonderful 101, which is just a port, but like other than that, I've got pretty much nothing to look forward to right now.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, slow season. It's been a slow gaming season for a while.
Well, it usually is around this time. A lot of shit targets holidays.
Yeah. Excellent. I'm trying to think of like what were the big games that just came out over the holidays?
Pokemon.
Honestly, yeah.
And that was pretty much it, right?
Yeah, there were a few other things that other people cared about, but as far as what I cared about, Pokemon.
Yeah, over the recent holidays, I mean, Luigi's Mansion 3, Pokemon, a few others. And I mean, not only that, but just like some of the changes that have been made to concurrent games. Like, I know Modern Warfare released in October-ish. I mean, we've had a lot of stuff happen at late 2019, but yeah, early 2020 has been a lot of just refreshes, I think.
Yeah, there's not too much going on yet. I think they're all just holding off till mid to late year, mm-hmm. especially with Cyberpunk 2077. I'm so, come on, man. that's going to be so good, but it's so far away.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
It's like late. It's late this year because it was going to be like May or something like that.
Yeah,
and
it was
got pushed all the way back to September, right?
Yeah, it was going
to
be in the first half of this year, and then it got pushed back a good few months. But they did say, hey, man, it's pretty much done. We're just ironing out all the like bugs that we're finding, which is, honestly, I commend that. I would rather it come out done.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite mentality of Bethesda.
Mm-hmm. We've talked
where
about
they just release the game and then fucking patch it for the next 10 years.
Not even.
And call
just
it
they
legendary
make a mod
edition
that's fixed.
Yeah.
Oh man. I mean, we've talked about it in a couple episodes, but I mean, it's all the same. It's the same thing every time. Like, I'd rather a freshly pressed shirt than a wrinkly shirt. So there mm-hmm. you go.
Even if you have to wait for it to be pressed.
Yeah.
It's still a shirt.
Yeah, it's a shirt that I would rather wear.
Still a shirt. Mm-hmm. That's how some people can justify it. It's like, hey man, you bought a shirt, you got a shirt.
That's true.
Just because it has wrinkles in it doesn't mean shit, you know?
Yeah.
It has, you know, fucking four holes in it, can cover your body.
Iron it out while you're wearing it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Ow.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to our topic of the day. Our topic of the day is going to be exclusivity, which is when something is exclusive.
Solid.
It's like whenever a game company releases a game strictly on one console or shit like that. You know, Halo was
one
always...
one platform of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Halo was always on the Xbox for the longest time. Was it? No, Metal Gear Solid's always been on PlayStation. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have your those staples of each console that this is why you buy the console. Like God of War, you buy PlayStation for God of War.
Mm-hmm. Fucking any and, Nintendo game.
Nintendo game, you fucking buy a Nintendo Switch or a Wii or a DS or whatever it's going to be, because Pokemon's been releasing on Nintendo shit for like the past 30 years now, and it's their bread and butter.
They publish all the games. Nintendo publishes all the games for them.
Yeah.
I mean, exclusivity, you know, just in that overview alone, I mean, it's nothing new, but I think that now there's kind of like two different types of exclusivity. I think like there's our console exclusives, which have been the same, you know, since there was a variety of consoles, like we know that. But something that's come up recently is games that are they're released in increments, like across platforms, but certain companies have certain exclusive rights to those games. Like I mean, and we'll get into this, but I mean the difference is that we know that Halo will never be released on anything besides Xbox, but Metal Gear Solid
and PC
and PC, but I mean
because that's what it's coming out on with the Master Chief Collection.
Well,
so
I mean now, right? But
now,
but,
yeah,
but before, I mean everything or I mean shit, for Zelda, right? For Legend of Zelda, it's always been Nintendo, whatever Nintendo console it is. But now we've seen Metal Gear Solid ports to the DS and to this and to the I want to say to Wii U as well. Like that's one thing. But this other thing that's kind of growing is it usually comes out for PC, and then a couple months later it comes out on Xbox on a console, and then even a couple more months later it goes on other platforms for PC, and that's usually like with Epic Games and with Steam and all that. That's where like in the past couple years it's been really really changing to those to the PC exclusive, and then it sort of trickles down everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like there's kind of two major reasons that things can get rolled out like that. One, it's a sort of a technical thing. We're working on this port and we're gonna release that, and then hey, now we've made a little money from that, so we can put resources into this port and the next one and the next one and the next one. That's really common in indie games. Like you'll see it with Stardew Valley came out PC, that's it. Mm-hmm. And then it came out on this platform, that platform, so on and so forth. You know, I think there's like a mobile yes. version. And yeah. So with indie games, it comes out, it tends to be like that. Whereas with AAA games, it tends to be more of a timed exclusive. They basically, some sort of storefront or some sort of platform will say, hey, release on us first and don't release anywhere else for whatever amount of time, 6 months, mm-hmm. a year, or whatever. And we'll give you a bunch of money up front. And the idea is, well, here's some guaranteed money, and I'm still selling my thing on this platform, and then eventually I sell it on the other ones. So it's
yeah,
kind of this like
most, the most recent one that I could think of was with the Borderlands, right? That was the one that we were talking about for a while.
Exclusive. And
timed exclusive
Outer,
with Epic because Epic
Worlds
bought out.
Well.
Yeah, Epic Games like bought out like a lot of exclusive rights to mm-hmm. like the first 6 months for like a good bit of games, because they're trying heavily to compete with Steam, and I guess you can't just release concurrently on Steam and Epic because people are just going to buy everything on Steam. So they're like, well, fuck you. We're gonna get these games exclusively for like 6 months or so. Because I don't even think Borderlands 3 is on Steam still.
Nope.
No, because they got a 1 year.
It was a one-year deal. They got a 1 year? God damn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's...
So we got a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the thing. That's the big... the Epic Games thing is probably the thing that made people the most angry about exclusivity, which is kind of, it's almost kind of ironic in a way, because it's one of the exclusivity deals that is at least hazardous directly to a consumer. You know, it's like,
yeah,
well, I have a computer, all I need to do is download Epic as well as Steam, and I can get all the Epic exclusives.
Yeah. Well, so the main thing people were angry about is they have the entire collection on Steam,
mm-hmm.
and then a new one comes out, and they can't have it with the rest of them on Steam. It's a new platform, and so it's just, it was more annoying than anything.
Yeah, and like certain things with, like if you don't like certain things about Epic, well, you don't have a choice. You know, and that's kind of what you're running into, is that it's representative of a potential problem of, hey, we're just going to buy out the competition. We're basically going to have a legal monopoly because we're going to buy all the intellectual property and say that we're the only ones who have the right to do it. You know, it's sort of representative of a grander potential problem than it is an immediate, well, I have to buy this other hardware problem.
Well, that's what I was thinking as well. I mean, it does become a double-edged sword where, you know, you want to have some variety. Like, Origin has its own, like, exclusives and different things like that, which is understandable. Epic has their own individual exclusives, which is another thing. And in some cases, that's all right. But at the same time, you also don't want a monopoly, right, where Steam is just like the one god king of all PC stuff, you know, at least marketing and business wise. Like, it's important for EA to have Apex as an IP and to only be accessible through Origin, and you know,
so with EA specifically, is a few months ago, actually in November, when Fallen Order came out.
Mm-hmm.
EA made a deal with Valve, and slowly they're going to start porting over everything on Origin to Steam.
Really?
So their exclusive stuff isn't really going to be exclusive. It may take forever.
Gotcha.
But they do have the plans for it.
I mean, that's...
So, like, Sims and shit like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
I mean, that's
yeah,
that's...
It started with just Fallen Order, and they've announced that Apex will be moving over to Steam. And then they said other things like FIFA and I think Madden and stuff like that. Like, their big titles.
Wow.
Are all going to be moving over.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, on one hand, that's really good for consumers and for the consumer base that has religiously followed Steam for years. You know, it's, I don't know. It's really weird because you have to see it from both sides. From like a consumer standpoint to a business standpoint, but then on the other hand, you're like, I don't know, I kind of do want everything under one place, because it makes it easier for connectivity, for you know, for communication, for discussions, for friends and stuff like that. It's a really, really weird situation, because I mean, you have some cool stuff that is only on Epic that you have to get Epic in order to get it, and you're like, well, I mean, I guess, sure, fine. But then they come out with something that Steam doesn't have, and you're like, oh shit, well, there's another one up for Epic. But then 6 months later, gets ported anyway. So it's like, what's the point? You know, it's kind of like, it's this kind of like back and forth battle between the necessity for games to be exclusive and the pointlessness of exclusivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always view this from a consumer perspective, because I am a consumer.
Right.
So I don't really care about the business side of it, because, you know, at the end of the day, the business is going to do what gets the most money out of you. even if that is unethical. So I don't really look at like a business favoring tactic as a good thing typically, unless it also favors the consumer. But with this, it's like, okay, so as a consumer, it's convenient to have a one-size-fit-all platform. It's convenient if everyone's on Steam, because if you want to share a friend code, it's really easy through the same platform. You know that if you want to share a game with somebody, you get them a Steam code. And so there's less confusion there, more unity. But also at the same time, you don't want one service to exist and be the fucking, like, only thing you can use, because then it can suck as much as it wants, you know?
Right.
So you want the competition, of course. And that's not the threat that Epic poses. You know, there are other competitors. There's Origin. There's I know there's Green Man Gaming, but they provide through Steam as a distributor. There's Uplay. That's the one I was trying to think of.
Jeez, Uplay. Fuck.
Yeah, there's Uplay and now Epic. And
Bethesda has their own launcher as well.
Yeah, Bethesda does have their own.
Yes, but they mostly just sell their own games, so
Yeah.
It's not, I wouldn't really see it as direct competition with Steam.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of options, and a lot of options is a very good thing. You can take the strengths of one platform. Say you like the user interface of Epic Games, but you don't like, or maybe you do like all the connectivity and the friend stuff and the cloud saving that Steam provides. You know, you can make that choice for your preference. You know, that is not the threat that Epic poses. The threat that Epic poses is that we have a platform that's just, well, I want to be the most successful platform, so I'm just going to buy my way to the highest level of success. That's sort of what's happening, because it's like, well, you have a choice to choose Steam, so I'm just going to make it to where you don't have a choice, essentially. Yeah.
Which is
in a legal way.
It's like, I mean, Steam has so many more features than what Epic has.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to even try to compare them, just because there's not a really good comparison to make between Epic and Steam. Like, Steam has been doing this for so fucking long, and Epic is, again, just trying to kind of brute force buy their way into a market share without actually having the product to back up having that market share.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they don't have like a service that's kicking ass. They have, they have proprietary, or they have IP that is worth a lot of money. So it's like,
yeah,
sure.
That's all they have. They don't have a better service. They just have the only service where you can get a certain product.
Yeah. And I mean, they also have, what is it? I think they're able to give you like a streamlined version of, I think it's Unreal Engine. Is that right? Or like, there's something through Epic that I think before they turned into this like crazy corporate giant, it was like you can download Fortnite, and then you can also play, you know, like the you can also use like the Unreal Engine service or some shit like that. I think.
Yeah, I think that's their engine, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah.
That is theirs. It's their engine.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess in one way it's good so that you have like a hub like that that's a bit more, that's kind of user-friendly and a little bit more streamlined, I think. It doesn't really apply to me because I don't develop, but I mean, even then it's like the service that, the its own proprietary service of like having like a little engine that you can use is still kind of like, meh, okay, I guess. Whereas, you know, but the thing is, with Steam, you have access to a lot of software. You have access to music. You have access to a lot of stuff, including the web. That's like, you know, it's big enough to where they made their own OS, and it's what, you know, when you build a Steam machine, that's what you do. Like, you get Steam OS, and it's got most of what you need. So, like, even then, comparatively, the other software based services that are offered are like fundamentally stronger Steam wise.
Yeah, and the ideal is that, kind of like I kind of brushed past a little bit, the ideal is that, you know, a new storefront wants to come in and say, hey, I want to be a new competitor in this market. I think there are some places where the market is lagging, and I think I can fill that niche, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's say hypothetically, let's make Epic the good guy in this scenario. Let's say Epic comes in and says, well, we can do this better, you know, and they make a really polished interface that's really quick and easy to understand, and you can slip in and out and do all this stuff and, you know, have all or at least similar features to Steam, something competitive, and maybe some new things that Steam doesn't have yet, you know? Because
yeah.
I remember being kind of not disappointed in Steam, but I kind of wanted it to have like a bit of an overhaul, because I don't know, the old layout, I know that y'all didn't like the update that made it all swooshy and fancy and sleek, but I was looking for something like a facelift like that, and Epic provided that. And you know, if there's a service that comes out that is better, and really the only difference is that it is better, I'm gonna go do that, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not so sunk into Steam that it's like, oh, I gotta buy it on Steam. I'll buy it on another platform if I think it benefits me, you know? And if Epic came in and did that, cool, all right. And plus, Epic provides a higher profit margin for the developers. You know, the developers get, I believe, if I remember correctly, and it hasn't changed, it's a 90-10 split rather than, wow, Steam's 70-30, which is like ridiculous. But you know, that alone would be enough for me to say, well, shoot, I'll do Epic if it, you know, supports my developers more. That'd be cool. But then there's the, well, we're going to strong arm and own the entire industry kind of tactics. And then also, I'm pretty sure they, isn't it like a known fact that they collect information on your computer, including like credit card information and like what games you have and shit, and they like sell your information?
I think that's something.
I wouldn't
doubt
it, because I think Tencent owns it,
yes.
Yeah, so I do not doubt that Epic Games is probably just a front for Chinese government spying.
Yeah, so they're just like, if you don't like that, cool, well, let's go to Steam. Oh, but I'm Epic and now I own like 50% of the new games coming out, so you have to use my service. Like having the terms of service where it's like, we collect information on you. It's like, cool, well, I'm going to opt out of this. It's like, well, if you want this game, you can't. You know,
right.
That's kind of where it's like, all right, well, now it's getting fucky.
It sort of like extorts you for your own information so that you can buy your own games, but as a means to take more of your information. If that does happen to be like the true de facto case.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, but even then, it's like, I was something I was thinking of from what we were talking about earlier. As a developer, I would want to use something like Epic if it meant that that those developer tools that I were proficient in were more streamlined and more user friendly. But even then, it's like, you know, I'm not a developer, so for me, the idea of, you know, the idea of the Epic Store is that they're, every now and again, they'll say, hey, here's our free game for the month, kind of like Xbox Game Pass a little bit. But it's like, hey, here's this indie game that came out like 6 months ago. It's free for this month. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll say that I purchased it and probably never download it, you know, if I was interested. It's like, as far as I'm aware, Epic is currently only that for me. Like, every now and again, sure, a cool game that was ported that I might like, you know, but other than that, it's just, it doesn't feel like it's worth it enough at this time, because even though with how they sort of deal out the earnings to developers and stuff like that, like, sure, it's in favor of the developer, but you know, at a certain point, it's like, is it worth it? And in some cases, it's just really not. Same thing for when, like, if something happens to come on the Blizzard store, right? Like Call of Duty or, you know, when Destiny was ported to, when Destiny was brought to Blizzard, you know, it was like, oh, I guess, you know, like I was already playing Overwatch, and so Destiny being a Blizzard service, because Blizzard does have some pretty cool user-friendly stuff, but like, even then, it's like, well, now that Destiny's on Steam, it's like, well, I don't really care that whole much about Blizzard now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even if they did with like the new Modern Warfare game and shit like that, it's like, it, at a certain point, it's like, it's just not worth my time to have Origin and Blizzard and Uplay and Epic and Bethesda and Steam to try and nitpick all of the games that I want, where if I have Steam and then a Nintendo Switch, you know, it's most of the stuff I play anyway.
Yeah, and like I feel like that's the sort of business justification for, well, we'll buy up all these exclusives, so they have to at least buy one game on our service, and then they'll be more willing to buy more games. Mm-hmm. Now, what I would think, and this is my opinion on Epic Games as a whole, or at least the launcher, if they took the money and made a featureful service, mirroring Steam in some capacity. One, they boast a higher yield for the developers, like I mentioned, but also it's a cleaner storefront. You know, Steam has a bunch of crap that gets released every goddamn day, and I get kind of sick of it. I can't find any new good stuff because there's like, for every one good game, there's like 1,000 or like 2,000 shitty games, and so the storefront's a goddamn mess. You can't look through the new releases. And so I would actually have a preference for Epic Games if not for all of those tactics. If they spent the time and the money, instead of buying exclusives, they just made a featureful service,
mm-hmm.
I personally would be more inclined to use it because they have more curation in their storefront.
Yeah,
they're again, it's like buying all of this, buying your way into the market rather than, you know, spending that time to actually develop a good product. It just seems like really ingenuine.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, yeah. Let's take an ad break. I will come back.
I was going to try and shoehorn some bullshit.
No,
like,
we're good.
No, we can just break. We don't have to deal with that again.
Yeah, any word play on exclusive shit. All right, ads.
Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed. We enjoyed. Let's continue this discussion. So I kind of wanted to bring up how like exclusivity has, it's just, it's basically business. It's how the business has been going forever,
mm-hmm.
kind of, but it's changing in how it could be done, because back in the gap when you had all these different consoles, well, I mean, you still have a lot of different consoles out, but I mean, your Ataris, your Magnavox, your Sega's, all of that stuff going on at the same time. I mean, if you think of it, not a lot of games were, there was not a lot of crossover in those games. A lot of times you had, here's your staple games for these consoles, and then like these people who just release games for this console because it's expensive to make games and ship games out, and we have to hopefully expect that we're going to sell these games.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times it was shallow pool of like, this is going to be on the Nintendo, this is going to be on the Magnavox, this is going to be on the Dreamcast, yada, 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 yada.
Yeah.
You didn't really have a lot of bleed over for most of these games, where nowadays it's, okay, what console do you want Skyrim on? You can pick any console from the past decade and get Skyrim on it.
Yeah, and you also have to recognize that, like, that porting back then was an enormous pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Because you had, like, when you're on a given platform, you're pushing the boundaries of that to the limit just to put a fucking yellow square on the fucking screen, you know? And, like, if you want to do something with Mode 7 on a Super Nintendo, well, you're shit out of luck if you want to put it on the Sega Genesis, you know? Porting back then was such a different beast and so, so much harder. And nowadays it's like, all right, well, with most engines, you can, you know, hit compile in this format and hit compile in that format. And obviously there's more testing that has to go on. There is effort involved in porting, but it is much more of a feasible proposition nowadays, sure, rather yeah than way back when.
Yeah, because I mean, we have plenty of tools, and there's, and also I feel like consoles are kind of, because how you mentioned there's like mode 7 for the SNES,
Super Nintendo,
there's,
yeah.
And then there's also, what was that like 3D thing in, was it the Sega had the 3D graphics chip? Which one?
I don't remember. I do know that the Super Nintendo had the Super FX chip that was in some
yes
cartridges. And that
yeah
was in
that's,
the,
yeah,
that was in the Star Fox cartridge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, back then, like, your console different, like your hardware differences were much more vast than what they are now. Nowadays it's like, oh, we have, you know, NVIDIA, you know, 2070 Super in it, plus basically it's just a dumbed down computer where all you can do is just run, you know, Xbox software on it. Like that's mostly what we're going towards nowadays, just because it doesn't make a lot of sense to say, because we have 3D technology. We've had 3D technology for fucking ever. We have network capabilities. We have all these storage options. It doesn't really make sense to try to invest in all of this R&D in order to get, like, here's our gimmick. Like, mm-hmm, here's our mode 7. Here's our fucking 3D graphics chip that we put in some games. Like, mm-hmm, sure, Nintendo's still doing that with, you know, here's our Switch and here's its motion controls and its gyro controls and it can dock and undock and mm-hmm, yeah. So Nintendo is still innovating consoles, but for the most part, I mean, you have, again, like Steam OS and like the Steam machine. It's just, all it is just a low to mid tier computer that only runs Steam, that it's affordable for people who can't buy higher end equipment, hiring stuff in order to, you know, run some games at I guess higher fidelity and whatnot. But we've changed from this. There's a reason why all of this shit was separate, and then now it's like digital copies. So you're not really worried about making cartridges and putting games on that and selling those cartridges. Now it's just, you know, here's a digital token for you to download the game. So there's no, the cost of actually like selling games and stocking games has basically gone to nothing nowadays. And it doesn't really make sense to try to push it to, because we have, again, like we have a lot of tools and a lot of technology to help us with porting. And there's also just conventions that have been narrowed down throughout the years, that's, they're all kind of based on the same backbone, the same, they all have the same skeleton. They're just, they implement differently and their OS is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So in order to port nowadays is much easier than it was back then.
Yeah. I think the big change came, I want to say it was probably in the mid thousands with like with Call of Duty. Cause if it's my understanding, I think Call of Duty had to have been one of the first games that, like Modern Warfare, right, to go to Xbox and PlayStation, and I guess PC as well. But like the biggest argument in game, in like not necessarily porting, but like cross compatibility, was among the consoles. PC was always kind of like, yeah, we have it too. For those of you, for everyone who's like done PC gaming like the whole way through, you know, they're like, yeah, we have, you can play Halo on PC, and you can also play you know, pinball and like, you know, just a bunch of other stuff. But if it's my understanding, I think it was like, it had to have been early mid thousands where the PlayStation and Xbox argument started, because of the ability to put games like Call of Duty on both systems. And so people were very up in arms about exclusivity, or not necessarily about exclusivity, but about cross compatibility. And back then, even at around that time, exclusivity was sort of like the understood thing, because of what we've mentioned with Atari and with, you know, mm-hmm, Mode 7 and different things like that.
Yeah, I would say there's three strata of exclusivity. And as you go down the gradient, it gets less reasonable to customers of why you would do it from a consumer's perspective. So like the first would be the example where it's totally unreasonable to port it. You know, something like I said, with Mode 7 and trying to port it to a Sega Genesis, it's like, well, Sega Genesis doesn't have that, so porting it's just unreasonable. And, you know, like porting a Wii game is generally, you know, unfeasible. Or porting even a Wii U game that like heavily utilizes the touchpad is like, that's, you know, not really a prospect most of the time. So it becomes sort of understandable when it's like a technical limitation of this is why, technically, why we can't. Then there's like, well, we just want to specialize this for the hardware, you know, like, obviously there were business reasons to it, but you can also argue the technical reasons for God of War being Sony exclusive, because they got to really refine the PlayStation experience, make sure it runs well on a single platform that is always the same. You know, if you have to balance it and test it for not only PlayStation, but you also have to balance it and test it for Xbox, and you have to balance and test it for PC and every configuration thereof that you could have for a PC, you know, then it's like, all right, well, I at least see why it's, you know, why maybe on a technical level we don't want to put resources into testing on like five different platforms when we could just test on one and make sure it's really fucking polished. Then there's like the third, which is, I have this game, it's on PC, but I'm only going to sell it on this one PC game distributor. And it's like, well, like, that takes no extra effort, really. You know, it just takes a little extra paperwork, but your game will work on a PC, so why not sell it on the other PC game distributors? You know, it's like, as you go down that gradient, it becomes less and less understandable, and I feel like it gets more and more infuriating for a lot of consumers.
Yeah, because it's just annoying. It's just an annoying inconvenience when it is a game that can functionally, like, it can run functionally everywhere, but one company wants to sort of rabbit hole you into, or just sort of just pull you into their software, so they make it exclusive for them. Like, it's just so annoying when that happens, because it's like the whole point is just so that you can make money. And I understand that as a if it were like a business entity, like, of course, because businesses make money and stuff, but like, all like, that's it though. There's nothing else to it other than just a marketing scheme. And when you have video games, and the reason why people are so passionate for this is because in most cases, video games are an extreme art form. So, like, the idea is why try to privatize art where you can have this form of art that's worth its $60 or worth its $100 if it's a gold legendary edition or whatever. You know, it feels more reasonable to spread that game across the market so that the people who made it can succeed with it, as opposed to a publisher or a distributor just saying, nah, this is ours for a little while, you know, and then a 6 months to a year later everyone else can have it. It's like, then at that point it's like it's a means to no end, because it's just gonna get released eventually. Mm-hmm. It seems ridiculous to me that, you know, and especially in a time where you don't have to worry about cartridges, like Devin was talking about, you know, the production value is so much more efficient because everything is going digital. You know, it seems like it would be backwards, you know, or it doesn't make any sense when it's something that can be very easily spread all over the place, but it's not, just because of a corporate giant.
Yeah. And I mean, if you take a look at other industries that do the same thing, the common comparison is like a video streaming service like Netflix or Hulu or any of those. It's like, all right, I want to watch this thing. What service do I have to get to watch this thing? So there's now consumer confusion of where the hell do I go to watch the thing I want to watch. And then on top of that, if someone owns the rights to a certain thing and they just go under or decide that they don't want to stream it anymore, but they still have the rights to it, well, now no one can see it, you know? And you can, I don't know that it's happened recently with like PC game distributors, but certain like publisher snafus have happened in the gaming industry before. I'm fairly certain that you actually can't, you can't download the Scott Pilgrim versus the World video game anymore because, you know, someone owns the rights to it and they're not allowing it to be distributed, you know? And it's like, what happens when only one platform can distribute a game and they decide they don't want to anymore, or they decide, or they don't even decide, they just go under and you just don't have that game anymore, you know? It's just kind of like, that's kind of your worst case scenario, but it is very much possible. And that's kind of my major worry, is that if I have a like a single platform that has all the games on it and no one else can have those games, what happens if that platform goes away? You know, what happens if that platform says, I don't want to give you this game, or now we're going to go with a different payment model? So it's like you have to buy membership to use this service, and no one, you can't get the game from anywhere else, but you have to pay me $5 a month to play the game that you bought. You know, like,
yeah,
there's all kinds of shit you could possibly get into with that.
That's where it gets scary, because I mean, we've already seen that with, like you were talking about, with streaming, with video streaming services like Netflix and stuff. Like when they pulled, I think it was when they pulled Friends. I think it was either Friends or The Office. They pulled it from Netflix and moved it. They didn't even move it to Hulu. It was just moved to something else. And people were, it's the same thing. It's consumer confusion of like, okay, well, now I have to just go pay for a whole nother thing. And the fear is that, you know, if for whatever reason, Steam is like, yeah, we're not going to distribute this anymore. You're going to have to go to Blizzard for it. And then in order to go to Blizzard for it, suddenly Blizzard's like, well, you have to be a Blizzard premium member, which they don't have that service, but it would be like Origin, like you must have Origin access to play this game. It's like, fucking what? I have to buy the game and pay a subscription just to play a game. Like at that point it's like, I'm going to play the game twice to get half of its value and waste a quarter of my time.
Yeah.
You know? And at that point, it's like, no, like, of course we're not going to fucking buy into that.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to if you want to play the game you want, which is rough.
Like, like we've said, it's not a thing yet. And it's kind of like, I don't want to fearmonger and be like, oh, man, it's definitely going to happen. Watch out. But like,
sure,
you could easily imagine it happening with something like Google Stadia, where we have the streaming of games where, you know, they play it for you and they stream you the video and audio, and you pay a regular fee to be able to access that, which is, you know, reasonable. You're paying for kind of the hosting cost. That makes sense. But what happens when they have an exclusive? And what happens when they have the exclusive and then it goes under? You know, Google Stadia is not doing very well. So if they happen to get their hands on an exclusive, well, that exclusive is just going to die with the platform. And we're even running across, I know, like, recently Nvidia, you know, launched their own game streaming service, which was like, wait, they did? But
yeah,
they did, to very little fanfare, but it works differently in that you can buy the game and pay them to host the game that you own outside of their platform, but you can pay them to host it and you can play it on their platform, stream the video in case they have a more powerful computer, you know? So that's kind of the trade-off there, and that's nice. But they've already had like rights issues of what game are they even allowed to play, you know, like certain publishers. I think almost all of Bethesda's games are being pulled from that service. Like it's not even that, like, oh, you can't sell it. Bethesda is saying, no, you can't play it. and someone else watches it. You know, like, you can't do that. We're pulling all of our games from your platform. And it's like, well, shit.
Yeah. Right, right.
So problems like that can occur very easily. And that's my fear is, you know, we're going to have when it comes to especially like PC exclusives, it's like, well, I have the rights to distribute it, but for one business reason or another, I don't want to, then that's it. You know, that's how it goes.
Right.
And if, you know, two entities have a little kerfuffle over who owns the property or who can distribute the property, then it's like, well, they're probably going to be in a deadlock and no one's going to distribute it for a while, you know? So it's things like that, that I don't like exclusivity, because then it makes shit like, where do I get my game? And is it really going to be my game? That question comes into my mind of, is this even mine? I paid for it, but do I have it? You know?
Right. And that's like we were saying earlier, and not, of course, you know, we're not saying that this is totally going to happen or any of that fear mongering, any nonsense like that. You know, it's just, this is just hypothetical. But the fact is that we've already seen that in the video entertainment industry, like the whole thing with Spider-Man. Like, does Disney own Spider-Man? Does Sony own Spider-Man? Okay, then we're just not going to have Spider-Man. And it's like, wait, what? And then
yeah.
and then half a year later, it's like, oh, well, it's kind of Sony's and it's kind of Disney, so you can watch it, but it's not gonna be on Disney Plus. And it's like, well, shit, you know. we've already seen corporate giants argue over IPs to the point where no one is satisfied. And we're not saying it's going to happen in the gaming industry, but it's very easy for shit like that to happen in the gaming industry.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if, you know, 6 months down the line, Epic releases another business thing that says, we're no longer going to send Borderlands over to Steam, you know, or something like that, where, you know, suddenly everyone who has, like Zach was saying, everyone who has their entire collection on one system can't have it in that one streamlinable supported system, and they're shoehorned into going into a whole separate provider that can very easily put it behind another paywall if they really wanted to. It wouldn't work, but they could do it, you know.
Yeah, I think I mean, Kevin, you work in tech industry. You know, you probably know this phrase. This product is not sold; it's licensed.
Yeah,
I mean that's basically that's their kind of reasoning. Usually, is mm-hmm. we're not selling you this game; we're selling you access to the game. And yeah. It's like, well, then just fucking put that in writing. That's, you know, this product is not sold; it is licensed. So that way we know where we stand. So that way we know that we don't own this game. We just get to play it. And if for any reason you decide to pull it off the market or shut down your service, we no longer have access to that game, but we also don't have any access or rights to like a refund, you know? Because it's like with like old consoles, you could just keep playing it, but all these newer services that are coming in and dying out, you buy a game on there, and when that service is gone, goodbye. You don't get that game anymore.
That's why, I mean, we've seen most games for the Nintendo, right? Most of the time, you start up a game on the, even as far as the Nintendo 64, and the first thing it says is licensed by Nintendo, and you're like, okay, I understand. Yoshi's Island is not going anywhere but Nintendo. Heard that. You know, it's nothing that we haven't seen before, but it's now in an environment where it could be a lot worse if it does.
Yeah, that was part of my resistance to buying digital when that first started to happen. I started to resist that idea because if they just want to take it off the platform, like, shit, PT got removed. PT was, the playable trailer for Silent Hills, and it was put on PlayStation 4 only. And then Konami was like, you can't distribute this anymore. You just fucking can't. And so it got pulled, and now no one can get it anywhere. You can only have it if you already downloaded it on your PS4, you know? And it's like, that was kind of the worst case for my brain of, well, I don't own this game. You know, I don't tangibly have my hands on it. It might get taken away at some point. Whereas if I buy a physical copy, it's like, well, I've still got the console. I've still got the disc. Nothing can delete it. You know, like I've got both.
Right.
But with that, it's like, well, I'm buying it on this service. I'm downloading it. And then you could take it off. Fortunately for PT, PT was free. So like, at least, you know, they stopped any download of the game. Like, even if you technically redeemed the free copy, you can't download it anymore. So
yeah,
what if people had paid $5 for it and now, no, we don't want you to distribute it anymore? And it's like, well, I paid $5 for it, you know? Like, yeah. That's where the problem lies for me.
They're gonna come into your computer and literally uninstall the game for you.
They're just gonna pop in and delete it.
Yep.
I mean,
no longer get this.
Steam has a way of sort of protecting that, though. I mean, one example that that came to my mind was it's hard to be subjective because it's a video game, and you know, but I mean, Lego Lord of the Rings, right? Lego Lord of the Rings is no longer available on Steam, but I still have it in my library. And there's a statement that's like in writing, they say it in the store page, that like, you can still play the game if you have it downloaded. Like, it is your game, even though this is a digital purchase, you know, but it is no longer available. And it's nowhere. You can't, like, I'm even like looking at it under shopping. Like, it's nowhere. It's completely gone. You know, it's just one of those things where something like this is already happening, but they're at least protecting your right to play a title that you've paid for.
Yeah.
In an online service, and I appreciate that a lot.
And in that scenario, I'm pretty sure you can, if you've bought it, you can still download it, correct?
I don't know. Oh yeah. If you've played it, I'm sure you'd be able to download it.
Like, that's fine. But like, my fear was always like the PT scenario where it's like you heavy air quotes bought it. It was free, but you clicked like, I want this, and you have the rights to it because
it's still a transaction. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a transaction at no cost, but it's still a transaction, and you have rights to play that game, or at least you have an expectation for that. And like, even if you've done that, you cannot download it from PlayStation anymore. Like you cannot get it. They will not let you. And it's like, like, that's the bad one. Like, because, I mean, shit, what happens if my PS4 breaks and I get a new one? Well, it's not on my hard drive anymore and I can't download it now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, fortunately, I haven't been burned by exclusivity in my lifetime very much, but it definitely poses a threat when it's just like monoliths just outbidding each other for who owns the right to distribute something.
I think that's I think that's the conversation. I think that's where we're gonna leave it. Is do you actually own anything? Is reality real? And
the answer is no.
What's the point of all of this?
Who really owns anything? I mean, I don't know. I think we've resolved what we needed to say.
Yep.
It's really scary though. Like,
it's not that scary.
I mean, the thing is that it's because most of our stuff is already protected, that like a lot of exclusivity is really not going to hurt the market anymore, because a lot of people are not going to stand for that shit. But even then, it's like, bar none, you know, don't be stingy, don't be bad business people, just make
cool
game.
Got it, understood. I think you basically solved economics.
That's my
exploiting us.
Yeah.
That's my global call to action. Yep. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, I think we can go ahead and wrap this up, gents.
Yep. Let's go ahead and call this done, so that way we can go do other shit now.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for thank you guys so much for checking in and seeing what we have to say. Thank you to Anchor, our baby daddy that's been allowing us to distribute our stuff all over the place. You can check us out at anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast, and you can send us a monetary donation as well at anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast/support. You can also give us a good review and a good rating on Apple Podcasts. We'd appreciate that as well. You can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Overcast, Radio Public, and a few others. Thank you to everybody that has dropped in from multiple countries on multiple devices. We all appreciate your love and support. Thanks again, and we will catch you guys next time.